Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You know, it's very difficult sometimes for Utah state legislators to take up a really strong position about the LDS Church, the Mormon Church. That's why Steve Urquhart waited until he was out of the legislature to take this. No, I'm just kidding. He did make some comments recently in the news about the strong, strong influence of the LDS Church on the legislature. And former Senator Urquhart gave voice to a lot of things that we have all suspected about that influence on the legislature. But he said it out loud and kind of confirmed what many people have believed is the case all along. So we had a nice, very nice long chat here about politics in Utah, about the role of religion in politics in Utah, and also about how did Steve Urquhart, who's still a Republican, get to be the kind of a Republican that you can really like. It's former state senator and representative Steve Urquhart on the Let's Go Eat Show.
Start your food. Will be up in a minute.
The Let's Go Eat Show food.
Yeah, the food for the Let's Go Eat Show.
Yeah, this is the Let's Go Eat Show, and there have been occasions lately where we haven't been eating on the Let's Go Eat Show, and then people complain. Well, I didn't hear you munching things in the microphone, which it's so disgusting. I want to hear you do it. So
okay.
So here we are. We're with our guest, Steve. You know, Steve, I always have the feeling I'm mispronouncing your last name.
Let me hear it.
Urquhart.
Yeah, Urquhart, yeah.
Urquhart.
Yeah.
Steve Urquhart.
Yeah, I mean, I answer to anything. It's Scottish. It's actually Urquhart, but that sounds even dumber.
Well, so. Maybe I should call you Senator. No, not Senator anymore.
Yeah,
right?
Has been.
Former state senator Steve Urquhart.
Has been Steve Urquhart.
Republican, one of the few Republicans I ever met that I said, well, that's a good guy. No, that's not true. I've known a lot of good Republicans in my life, but you would be considered probably a pretty liberal Republican. Are you still a Republican?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I'm fiscally conservative. I believe in small government, all of that. All of the social stuff, I'm pretty agnostic. So maybe that's more libertarian.
Mm-hmm. You were a state senator from St. George, representing whatever that whole district is there.
Right. So 8 years in the House, starting in 2001, and then 8 years in the Senate.
16 years dealing with the Utah State Legislature. So that's how many governors?
That was four governors. I loved every minute of it. You know, sometimes constituents and stuff could get a little worked up and long hours and all that, but it's kind of like if you love boxing, you know, you're going to take some punches and it's part of it, and I love the whole deal.
So you're an attorney, right?
Correct.
And what kind of law have you specialized in?
You know, that was a tough part of the legislative gig is figuring out how to make a living along with that quote-unquote part-time job that took all my time. So I was with just my own small law practice, and then joined a big firm, seeing if that might work. And finally, I just ended up doing corporate counsel work. Gave up my office. I just did it out of my home. Figured if I wasn't going to make any money, I can at least cut overhead. Mm. And so just had a few businesses that they were big enough to have ongoing problems, issues, but small enough where they didn't have in-house counsel. So I was outhouse counsel.
Outhouse counsel?
Yes.
I don't understand how legislators, unless they're independently wealthy business people, I don't understand how you guys can do it, how it is, because when the legislature's in session now, it's only for, what, 90 days?
45.
Only 45 days.
But then you have, you know, anything your constituents need all year long, you're doing it. You don't really have staff to do it, and we have meetings throughout the year. No, I never really figured out that part about how to make a living.
Now, there are guys who already have their money made, mm-hmm. and that's easy on them. But I don't see how you possibly could do it. Did your wife work?
Yeah, she started a business. Fortunately, she was very successful at that, and that's what kept us going. Altitude Summit, it was a conference for social media mavens, so design-minded people. Yeah, it was kind of a big deal. It was a lot of fun.
She's still doing that?
She sold a year ago. Or this past year. So she sold that, and we picked up stakes and came to Salt Lake. Kind of a new beginning for us. Kind of fun.
Yeah. Let's go back, Steve Urquhart. Where, you know, you're not from Utah. We're going to go back into your past a little bit here. Not from Utah originally.
Should I lay down for this on the couch?
No, it's okay. It's okay. You don't have to. I'm not going to psychoanalyze you, although you may end up psychoanalyzing yourself if I know anything.
Oh, no.
So you're not from Utah. I can hear it in your voice, and I want to say you told me that you were from Texas.
Yes, I'm from Texas. Went to school in Massachusetts, a small liberal arts college, Williams College, and so we were studying the Iliad, and the first class I was in, and first time I ever spoke, I forget what the question was. I said, well, Agamemnon and his troops, they were fixing to get in the boats. And so the professor said, yeah, well, the answer is correct, but let me help you with the grammar. Mm. So I'm like, I should have gone to University of Texas.
Yeah, that'd be okay down there, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're to fix. It's a hefty verb. I mean, it can carry multiple meanings.
Mm-hmm. And so you go to the liberal arts college and you go to law school. Where'd you go to law school?
BYU.
So you were born into the Mormon church, or did you join?
No. So my family's kind of a mutt family. And so one of my brothers, so they're like two sets of boys, you know, two that they were like, you know, 18, 14 years older than me and another brother. Mm. And so they were, it was a wild place.
Your Texas town?
No, my home.
Oh, your home.
I mean, it was interesting in a lot of ways. And anyway, so, you know.
You're skirting over that a little bit.
I kind of am. You know, family turmoil, all that great stuff. So we had some friends that were Mormons, and my brother and I went with them. And we joined the Mormon church when I was 10. And thank heavens, it was a good stabilizing thing. It really was good for us, something much needed.
It's kind of like the same reason that some kids in poor neighborhoods in L.A. and places like that give for joining a gang. I mean, really, isn't it? I mean, it was you found a sense of identity. Yeah. You found some protection from whatever was going on. And we won't go into it,
we were pretty unstable, the family. And the Mormon church, it kind of lays out a blueprint, and it provided some stability, some structure, you know, a lot of really good adults and other kids that we interacted with. It was a very positive thing for us.
Mm-hmm. The rest of your family, your other two brothers and mother and father, they just went on their merry way doing whatever they were doing.
Yeah, so my mom and one brother joined, yeah.
Oh, really? So three of you.
Right.
Yeah. And I I'm not going to pry too much, but the rest of the family, your dad and another sibling or two?
Yeah, they did not join. So this is a podcast. Can we cuss on this?
Oh, shit, yes.
Okay. So I went on a mission to... So my dad, he's brilliant, but he's the original Bubba. And so he joined the Navy a week after he turned 16, right before World War II. And I mean, he's a hard guy. And so I went to on a mission to Brazil, and so got home. And so I figured, you know, this crusty old guy, he needs to find Jesus. And so I started.
You're proselytizing to the Brazilians, and now you're going to proselytize.
Yeah, why not my old man, you know? Heaven might have a place for him. And so I'm talking to him about it. And, you know, so Joseph Smith, he prayed in the Sacred Grove. So he said, son, you seem reluctant to talk to me about the proposition that God talks to men and women. And he said, don't be reluctant. He says, I believe it. I see it every day. I see people who talk to God. And I'm like, wow, cool. He said, but you know what? From the people I see, he must tell them some crazy ass shit. So I said, hey, you want to go to the Astros game? He said, that'd be a good idea.
Yeah. So you stayed fairly close to your dad and all of that, even though you joined the church and went off and...
Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting dude. I mean, he died 4 years ago. Just truly an interesting guy. A lot of charisma. Just wild as wild can be. You know,
I like that you said he's an original Bubba. He was a Texas wild man.
Yeah. You know, he was very supportive of my brother and I being in the Mormon church. You know, he knew what he wasn't providing, and you know,
like a stable family, and
yeah, and I mean, you know, the oldest two brothers, there were a lot of issues there that stability might have corrected, and so he was grateful for the Mormon Church. He had no interest in it, but was glad that we were involved.
So you grow up being a Mormon kid in Texas, big town. Small town? Where
Houston.
Were you? You're in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Dylan. So we have breakfast from the... and by the way, now we... I feel perfectly free to eat on the air and you on the microphone, and you should too, Steve.
Okay. That's great.
Don't hesitate a bit.
Thank you, Dylan.
But we have to eat with our fingers, apparently. Oh, there it is. So you're a Mormon church kid in Texas, in Houston.
Yep.
You go to school, liberal arts school, and then you decide to go to law school at BYU, and you come to Utah for the first time when you went to BYU?
So my junior year of college, they like the students, Williams College, they like the students to go somewhere else. So I came out to BYU that year as an undergrad and figured that was a great opportunity to make out with some Mormon chicks, and so I took advantage of that, and that was awesome. And had a great year. I'm a biology major, so was involved in a bear study that they had going on in the La Salle Mountains, and so we would trap bears and radio collar them and chase them all around the mountains.
Sounds dangerous.
Was it dangerous at all?
Oh, yeah, it was. Naturally, it's dangerous because you're working with bears. Plus, we were kind of stupid, so that made it really dangerous at times. But
beautiful place to spend some time.
Oh my gosh! And so, I was low man on the job, and part of what we were doing, we were seeing what the bears were eating, and bears, they're tough to observe. So the way you see what they eat is you see what they ate. And so we would check our traps and process the bears and in the morning, and then the rest of the day I would go around looking for bear shit, which we would gather. And I gathered, I think it was 600 samples. It was I like to work, and man, I can work. So you know, then spent that winter kind of picking through the bear shit, dried it out, and was counting out ant heads.
Because
the ant heads don't digest, and so when bears are really stressed and hungry, there's nothing else to eat. They will just eat ant beds. So that was a way to see how they were doing. But so if anyone ever asks you if a bear shits in the woods, you send them my way.
Definitely.
So
yeah.
How long were you out there total?
Was out there for the summer, so 3-4 months, and then
you brought the bear shit back with you.
Yes,
that's when you were going.
We dried it, and then I went back to Williams College, but came out in the winter, December, January, to count ant heads and bear shit.
I'll ask a question of Bill, well, so you can start.
Yeah, you can have a bite of your sandwich there.
Anytime I've gone to a national park or down the rivers or things like that, and I see the cabins where the forest people, the forest rangers live, I couldn't do it. I think I'm too afraid of nature to move out into the wilderness for months at a time. I think I'd have a panic attack.
Well, I'm afraid of bears. I mean, I am. I'm just, whenever I'm out camping or something, I really do think, you know,
but Bill,
bears.
Do you think you could you do that? Could you go live out in a little cabin,
sure.
Clear away
mm-hmm.
and not, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could be away from
fear of nature then.
I could be away from civilization. You know, that wouldn't bother me. But.
So working the bears, that all worked out fine. We caught 1 year old, and Mama was out running around. She wasn't happy about it, so that was a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some tense moments. Getting the cub out without being attacked by Mom, and the scariest things I had. It was just when I was out looking for bear shit. Had two bears that I saw them. They didn't see me, and I'm like, I'm gonna see how close I can get. And so I was. You know, the wind was blowing in the right direction, so I'd sneak up a few feet at a time while they were, you know, eating loudly or whatever it was. And so I got super close.
Yeah.
And black bears, if they see you, they'll run away.
They're literally poking the bear.
No, I was completely poking the bear.
Yeah.
And so I got super close. I mean, probably 10, 15 feet away, and they don't like that. So they charge, both of them. So, I mean, first one did it, and so, I mean, I'm just... just beyond frightened. And so I'm like, that was stupid, never again. And then 2 weeks later,
I'll try that again. Did you ever see that documentary, Grizzly Man?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Pretty.
That was Werner Herzog, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Werner Herzog. Yeah. Pretty, a great documentary. And I had heard the story of that guy before I ever saw the documentary, but the guy went and lived with the bears.
Yeah, what's it? Yeah. What is it about?
Well, it's about this guy. He was not a trained person at all.
No, he was just pretty crazy.
Yeah, he was just kind of a nut. But he went, and it was in Alaska, I believe, and he went and to study the bears. That's what he wanted to do, is study bears, and he did, and he did it for a long time. I guess he made some pretty. Actually, some pretty detailed and useful observations of how bears act in the woods and in the wilderness and all of that, and he kept records and studied bears, but he started naming these bears,
he's filming all of this. He's
he filmed
also
it all
brought
the time,
his
yeah.
camcorder and a bunch of tapes
mm-hmm.
and filmed
recorded
every single
stuff,
day.
And he did this for a number of years, and he also had a couple of different women in his life that went and lived in tents with him up there, and he would be there for months and months and months at a time, and then finally he would give the bears names, and he would get up really close to them, and
so not to spoil the ending, but I found his teeth in a pile of bear shit.
Yeah, it was
wait, but literally.
No, well, I mean that's.
Well, I didn't find his
he
teeth,
didn't, but he recorded everything, and well, I don't know. We can give it away because the story was known. He was this woman he was with. They were in a tent. There were bears all around, and it was at night, and there was an attack. The bears attacked the tent and killed and kind of I think ate a bunch of both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, I think they ate enough of them or dragged them far enough away that it's a little bit of a mystery if they died during that attack or not.
Well, anyway, right? there were cameras rolling, though. He had a camera rolling the whole time, like he always did. And pretty much his death by bear is recorded on camera. I think the really effective part of that documentary is, you know, Werner Herzog, who's a strange dude, but a brilliant filmmaker. He gets the film of the guy being eaten by the bear, and I don't remember if it was exactly he promised his family or the guy's family or sister that he would not show the death. Mm-hmm. But he said, but then they allowed me to see the footage. And he shows himself going into this room, and then he comes out, and he said, we could never put this in the film. It is just too, you know, and he just makes it almost even worse because you imagine what it looks like.
But I really have a massive thing for bears ever since that.
Really?
And, you know, I know this is morbid, morose, but yeah, if I could pick my way, it would be way to go. It would be death by bear.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Death by grizzly. Just because I love the animal, you know, you got to go some way. It'd be better than, like, I don't know, just choking on my own vomit or something.
Well, wouldn't it be, like, better to go, like, you say goodnight to your family and you go to bed and then you just don't wake up? Wouldn't that?
Yeah, but that's boring. No, I
want death to be boring.
No, so I tell my kids the way I really want to go is I want it. So there'd have to be some level of stupidity involved, because I want to go some way that they can't help but crack up anytime they tell the story, and whoever they're telling it to, mm-hmm. like, oh, I'm sorry. That's horrible.
That's what my stupid dad did.
Yeah. Okay.
So
I like that.
Let's go back to where I was going to go before you sort of veered off into bears, is you're a convert to the Mormon Church at a young age, and you're living in Texas and going to Mormon Church in Texas, and then you come to Utah and take up residency being a BYU student, and when you come to Utah, you're dealing with a whole different kind of Mormon.
Yeah, and so, you know, I guess let me skip ahead and say I no longer go to the Mormon Church. So I guess we'll take the narrative forward in some form. But, yeah, I was all in. And so to come to Provo and live there among a bunch of Mormons and firesides and devotionals and all of that.
Honor code.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, I was kind of bristled at honor code and a lot of those things. I mean, I really tried to be a good Mormon. I really did and succeeded in several ways. But, you know, I am a father's son, so strained at a few things. But, no, I loved it. Thoroughly loved it.
And you got married here. Did you marry a Utah girl?
I did.
Utah
Mormon
girl. We got
married in the St. George Temple.
Mm-hmm. Had a family.
Yeah, we have four kids and raised
in the Mormon Church.
Raised in the Mormon Church. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we started. So I think I was the one. I started to not believe, and that had something to do with our oldest child. Our oldest child. She's her own person, and she's just completely her own person. So it was a weird fit for her in the church and in St. George. So you know,
she didn't fit in
at all. I mean, she's in San Francisco now and has her tribe, just very happy and
how old is she?
Packed social calendar. She's gonna be 22. Born on my birthday, my first child born on my birthday.
So that's how you, and I remember this part of the narrative. We talked about this when we first met. You kind of came into prominence. Now, I mean, I don't think I'd ever heard of you, and you'd been in the legislature for a long time. But
thank you.
but you were one of the first. Maybe the first. You think you're the first person to ever put forward a bill in the state legislature that would give rights to certain privilege or rights to LGBT people in Utah.
Yeah. So my goal was always to stay out of the media, especially the first 2 weeks of the session. You know, I'd always tell my family, if I'm in news articles the first 2 weeks of the session, just slap me when I walk through the door, because, you know, the only things that make the news those first 2 weeks are just the stupid, embarrassing bills. And but by and large, I think the legislature can do its job and not mug for the cameras too much. Just kind of do the blocking and tackling, just be quiet about things. And boy, that completely went out the window my last 3 years there.
No kidding.
Total media whore.
Did you get to kind of enjoy it in a way?
I really did. Yeah. I loved it. But yeah, that was because of LGBT issues. So Brandi Balkin, she was over at Quality, Utah. She came down to St. George probably 2012. And
she's a lovely person.
Yeah, I love Brandi. And so she said, look, here's Equality Utah. We really want to include sexual orientation, gender identity in the non-discrimination laws of the state for employment and housing. Here's why. And laid out the reasons. And I said, you know, that's great. I'm with you. I don't think my constituents are not going to do anything for you. Have a nice trip home. And so we remained friends. She was very good. And probably the biggest thing to do with my transformation was my oldest daughter. She going into her senior year, so that would have been, I think, 14. No, it would have been earlier than that. I messed up the
20,
days. That would have been 2010 that Brandi came down. And so, yeah, it would have been.
Now,
about,
she didn't just go to you. I mean, she went to other legislators kind of trying to find somebody who would. Or did she just come to you?
Well,
why did she pick you?
While she was down there, I think she visited. But I think she figured, okay, this guy might get it and he might help out.
Was that based on something she knew of your record in the legislature?
I think just because I'm a cool dude, Bill.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
That was that cool dude down in St. George.
So her senior year of high school, my dates are all screwed up here. So what about 2011 or something? My oldest daughter, I said, what are you going to do this year? She says, well, I'm going to do debate. I'm going to do this, going to do that, going to be president of the Gay Straight Alliance. I'm like, dat.
What?
Go back. And so I said, what's with this? She said, are you asking if I'm gay? I said, well, probably more things than that, but yeah, sure. And she said, no, I'm not. You know, but I'm an ally. My friends are bullied and picked on. And so I said, look, this is going to give me political problems. And so if you're doing it just to do it, how about you don't do it? But if this is some, you know, let someone else be president. But if this is something that really matters to you, then, you know, I love you more than this political gig. So if you decide to do it, if it really matters, then let's do this. And mm-hmm. So she thought about it and she said, I'm doing it. And I said, okay, cool. Then we're doing it.
It's interesting to me that, it just, I guess it's stupid of me, but it just seems so strange that just the very fact of your daughter being president of a gay straight alliance in at a school in St. George would somehow cause you political problems.
Oh my gosh, it's
just amazing.
You know, I really wish I would have kept it. I have no idea why I didn't keep this, but a constituent, Marta Haar, sent me the nastiest email ever, just talking about how, you know, my daughter is evil and horrible, and, you know, Sarah and I must be horrible parents to raise her, and, you know, I mean, making assumptions that she's gay, and, I mean, who the hell cares if she is, and, mm-hmm. but, so her intent in that was to move me, and it did move me. I mean, that hit hard and moved me the opposite direction she thought it would. And I'm like, wow, this is, you know, so that personalized it.
Yeah.
And, you know, then the main thing that changed me is just seeing Zell's friends. They were over at the house a lot. And this is something I'm embarrassed to admit it, but I admit it often because hopefully it will help some people think. I used to see, if I knew someone was gay, that's what I saw first and foremost. It's like, you know, I served in the legislature with Jackie Poskupski, and Jackie was gay, and she liked Willie Nelson, and she was cool and fun mm-hmm. to hang out, but that's the first thing I saw. And, you know,
yeah.
Scott McCoy was in the Senate. Well, Scott's gay, and he's a lawyer, and he's brilliant, and, you know, mm-hmm. all of this. But that is really the first thing I saw. I mean, that's prejudice, right? And I didn't see a human who happened to do all these other things. And So with Zell's friends, you know, she's always a bit of an outcast. And what I saw is I saw these kids who loved my daughter. And she would laugh when she was with them. She'd have a great time. And some of them really needed haircuts. And they probably could have done without so many piercings. And and I guess some of them are gay. I have no idea which ones are, but man, God, I just love that they love my daughter. And, you know, so it humanized things. And, again, what an embarrassing thing to admit. But I just started seeing, I guess, how do you say that? I saw less and less of someone's sexual orientation. It's just these are people, and they're struggling through something. So now I'm to the flip side where I see people who are outcasts and struggling. And I guess my daughter taught me this, and I'm just – they're my people. I don't really give a shit about what the details are. Just if they can use help, then I'm going to help out.
Did you contact Brandy Balkan and say, remember that conversation we had?
Now we're getting into the historical record, so let me get this right. 2013, in January during the session, or this probably would have been early February, the last day to file a bill, Brandy came up to me and she said, hey, we thought we had a Republican sponsor to run the non-discrimination legislation. He backed out. It either needs to be filed today or we can't run it this year. That would be a huge disappointment, wondering if. And I said, do you want me to run it? And she said, yeah. I said, I'm there. Let's do it. And, I mean, that was the extent of the conversation. And so she was kind of dumbfounded because I think she'd wound herself up for a big persuasive conversation. I said, I remember what we talked about a few years ago. I've watched my daughter, and let's do this. It's time. And it was just a hell of a ride ever since then, just a blast.
So you introduced it that time, and it went nowhere?
Not quite. So ran it that year, and our goal was to get it through committee. And went to committee knowing that I had three votes for it. I needed a fourth vote and thought ahead two senators who, you know, and I'm smarter than this, more experienced than this by this point. They're like, oh, you know, I'm really persuaded by a lot of the things you say. I mean, you raise some good points, and I could see, you know, blah, 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 BS, BS, BS. And so, man, they weren't – I mean, this is like right before we go into the committee. Hey, have you thought about it? Yeah, you know, still the same. Great arguments. And then both those two, they just tee off. I mean, these things that they'd been preparing for weeks. I'm like, ah, you bastards. Mm-hmm. But then – so, one of those was going to be my fourth. So I didn't have a fourth. And so I'm just like, oh, this is bad. This is horrible. Because I was telling people, no, I think we have it. We're going to pass out of committee. And so room full of people, they were excited for it to pass out. And so they, you know, all in favor say aye. And, three people said aye, all opposed. And so four people said no. And so then the chair said, all right, who voted aye? And, you know, let me see your hands. So by this point, I'm looking down. I'm just like, oh, this is horrible. It's horrible. And so the chair said, okay, this passes out 4-3. And so I'm like, oh, that was a miscount.
No, wait, somebody changed there?
And it wasn't one of those two. And so so I look up, and Ralph Okerlund from Monroe, you know, Richfield.
I've met him.
He's a stud, man. And so
he's really conservative.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you talk about it. I mean, I'm worried about my constituency. It's from Richfield, Utah. And so I'm looking at Ralph. Ralph's looking at me, and I mean, you can tell he just has one of these looks on his face like, oh, shit.
What did I do?
And so, you know, we go back to the chamber, and so, yeah.
Did he tell you, because it literally changed from the voice vote
I think voice vote. I think he voted no, and then
because he thought it was going to pass.
Yeah, he thought one of those two. I mean, he'd probably had the same conversations, and so we got back to the chambers, just the two of us. And I'm like, Ralph, what'd you do?
He said, with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But I don't know.
Does he say why he did?
No. And so, you know, I did circle back with him a couple weeks later. I said, Ralph, explain it to me. He said it just needed some more discussion.
And he's still up there, right?
It did not
kill him with his constituents.
No, and I think the thing is, I'm really proud of the legislature. You know, I mean, as you see, I'll take them on issues, mm-hmm. alcohol reform or whatever it is. But things I love, you know, I don't think they're out of bounds of criticism. I think people who know about them need to criticize for improvement. I'm super proud of the legislature, and when you do tough things, bold things, it helps you. And so everyone looked at Ralph on that, and I think there was a lot of agreement that it should have that victory. It was just time. And so Ralph just stuck his neck out, I think, very unexpected. I think he had no intention of doing that. Mm-hmm. But when those other two you know, came out swinging bats, he bumped it forward, and that's all we got. And then the next year, we didn't even have the debate, because that was right after the Kitchens case came out. And
Derek Kitchen,
yeah, versus Herbert, yeah.
Who's now a city councilman.
Yeah, so the Judge Shelby decision that same-sex is the marriage is the law of the land.
Yeah.
You know, I think in the movie, you know, so in the movie of that day, and Okerlund changes his vote, right, it's so he then goes home and, like, he has a gay family member who changed him.
Maybe, like you don't know.
You know, like your daughter did with you, just a family member who...
Who knows?
I'm going to write the script.
Write the script. That might be some artistic license there. I think Ralph just, you know, again, being part of the legislature... you know, if you're not conservative, you're not going to like a lot of the outcomes. But I think the process, I think the discipline, to me, I feel like I played for the New York Yankees. I think that body really knows what it's doing. It really has discipline. I bring it on. If you guys want to challenge the legislature, I'll wrestle you right here and now. I love that body. And to me, Ralph was just showing the very best of what it does. Is, you know, here's a group that it's been on the outside of the state. It's time. It needs to have a bit of a victory.
Do we want to talk about that?
Well, we will. You're talking about the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
That's the body you'll go to bat for and wrestle me for. You know, the House, it may be a different matter. You know, they're the ones who just, you know, have stood in the way, and now it's become a moot point probably, but stood in the way of Medicaid expansion for so long, you know, and people getting sick and dying, be damned, they don't give a shit, you know?
Well, I was speaking about the legislature as a whole. I spent 8 years in both bodies, very proud of both. Part of it is they're two very different bodies by design. So my first week in the Senate, so I'd spent 8 years in the House, four of those in leadership, and Wayne Niederhauser, he's now president, but he was just a rank-and-file member. He was running a bill, and so I came up to him on the floor with my hair on fire, just, you know, Wayne, this bill is a nightmare because of blah, 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 and I'm just laying into him. He said, Steve, you're in the Senate now. If you don't like the bill, I'll circle it, and we can have a discussion and work this out. I'm like, whoa. You do that? He says, yeah, that's how the Senate works. I'm like, wow. Because in the House, you know, I mean, you tell someone, I don't like your bill, they say, I don't care, go find 37 friends and defeat it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really a rough and tumble body. When I was whip in the house, you sit on the back row so you can kind of keep an eye on folks. When I needed someone's attention, I just hit them in the back of the head with an M&M, and it's that's kind of the nature of that body. And so the house is, you know, it's an interesting thing for me was going out and walking people's districts. I do think that they tend to be very representative of their districts, and mm-hmm. so to the extent,
what about those? I mean, there are surveys that have shown, or a poll, people take a poll and they say, and it says, it seems to me, though, that the legislature, and I think particularly the House, but, and you know what I'm going to say, more conservative probably than their constituents.
Yeah. I mean, now I think that the surveys that count are the ones that we have every other November. I mean, I think the voting, and these people continue to be voted in, which I think suggests they are reflective of the folks. Well, let me put it this way, reflective of the people who vote, the people who are in the process. Now, it will be interesting to see with Count My Vote and the way that the caucus and delegate process has changed. I mean, you know, today we're going to vote, and probably, well, can we talk? Yeah.
What?
So
we can talk about whatever.
Anything. So, you know, probably Mayor Curtis is going to win that, having come in.
John Curtis, there's a, the election's going on today, a three-party,
yeah.
or three-person people
the
running.
The Republican primary,
Republican,
right,
yeah. Curtis is the mayor of Provo.
Yeah, who came in.
He's the only one of those three that doesn't scare the shit out of me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah, I mean, so John's fairly moderate and came in sixth or seventh in convention. I have no idea why he went through the convention process. But, you know, if he comes in sixth or seventh in convention and then wins the primary,
oh, that tells you something, yeah.
It does. And so I think our politics probably are changing in this state, and I think we will see outcomes that probably are a bit more reflective of the constituency.
I hadn't thought of that, but that's, yeah, I mean, that really does, it would show you, if, assuming he wins it, it's very tight, I know, but it would say, yeah, the convention, people who do this, all the stuff in the conventions are very hardcore, and but then when you put these guys out for a vote, they're a little more forgiving and liberal and so forth.
Didn't the similar thing happen with the governor, right? Gary Herbert,
yeah.
And the
Jonathan
other guy?
Jonathan Johnson.
And he won the convention, and he was way more conservative
yeah.
than Gary Herbert,
mm-hmm.
but Gary
yeah.
Herbert won the popular vote, right?
Yeah.
The primary. So will this be a repeat of that? Or, I mean, if Herod, of course, wins, then people can say, well, the convention process works just fine.
Mm-hmm. And Gary Herbert, a man of the people, you know. I mean, he really is. He is, you know. He's your Uncle Gary. He's your next door neighbor. He's your, you know. He's Gary.
He's Gary.
Yeah.
Since we're here, so this direct phone line that goes from Temple Square up to the Capitol, up to just right. Is there a direct?
Well, you're just going to jump right into this, aren't you?
Well, I was going to ease into it.
Nope, we're here. Does God talk directly to the legislature? Does he talk to the prophet?
Right.
He phones him up. Tell
right.
me, what do you think about the separation?
Hang on.
I was giving you both a second to have a bite of your food.
Oh, okay.
Well,
I choked
being,
on that bite.
Being a little bit silly for a minute. Yeah. But yeah. what I want to ask is about the separation of church and state in Utah. Mormons are very
what
prevalent.
Separation of church and state?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was the joke.
Steve, we're talking to you today because you popped up in the news again. You're not in the legislature anymore, but you started talking about
some people just can't keep their yappers shut.
Yeah, you didn't have to say anything about this. Why did this come up? You started talking about the influence that the Mormon Church has in the legislature and how they wield that influence.
Okay. Now, it does make some sense. Mike Christensen, he stepped down. He retired after running the Legislative Office of Research and General Counsel. Mm-hmm. And John Cannon has been picked to replace him. And John, spent many years in legislative research and general counsel, but spent the last, 3 years maybe, as the main lobbyist for the Mormon Church. And so there were concerns in the media saying, hey, not cool that this powerful entity that their lobbyist is now going to run the Office of Legislative Research and General Counsel. We need a little more separation.
So what people may not realize, just let's sort of make that a little clearer, there are lobbyists who come up to Capitol Hill here in Utah, like they do in nationally, representing businesses. They'll be the Association of Real Estate Agents, and they'll hire a lobbyist to come up and push bills.
I'm sure there's somebody who lobbies on behalf of the radio industry, television people. I mean, a lot of businesses.
There must
have
be.
Lobbied.
I guess I don't know. And maybe I should do that.
Oh my God!
I'd be a good lobbyist. No, I wouldn't.
Nope.
I'd be terrible.
Nope, you'd be terrible.
But you know, people who come up and they're lobbyists for the hospital association, for the power company, for any number of businesses and charitable lobbyists and pet rescue lobbyists and all of that kind of. And the Mormon Church also has a designated lobbyist, and it was this guy. What's his name again?
John Cannon. So I posted on Facebook saying I have big issues with how the Mormon Church lobbies the legislature and how it controls so much of the politics in the state. However, that being said, I'm fine with John Cannon running the Office of Legislative Research and General Counsel. John is awesome. So that was the post I put out.
Mm-hmm. So why? I mean, it seems odd that you are fine with it. We're fine with that because, I mean, he may be a man of great integrity, but still.
There's again, like I said, I feel like I played for the New York Yankees. There's a lot of discipline in LRGC, Legislative Research General Counsel, that office. They don't put their thumbs on the scale. They are nonpartisan. I mean, without fail, I've interacted with them extensively. He's a product of that. I think it's going to be easy for John to take off one hat and put on the other.
Yeah, I mean, you can do that.
When I was rules chair in the House, John staffed it, and as rules chair, every bill has to go through rules before it moves on. So there's a lot of power in that committee, and so John was my go-to. He was my consigliere on that. Mm-hmm. And so we had a lot of private conversations. I know how he thinks, I know how he acts, and he's just a wonderfully decent human being.
So you just make this post on Facebook that you support him 100%, and then how did this become a news story?
So, you know, and I mean, I stepped on the gas when I talked about the problems I have with the Mormon Church, and we can go into those. Let me correct myself. I don't have problems with the Mormon Church. I have problems. I have a lot of love for it. I have problems with how it operates in the political realm. But then a representative who's been there a short amount of time and I don't think has carried, you know, bills that matter much. I don't think he's been involved in anything big. He took me on and said I had no idea what I was talking about. All right. That warrants a response. And so then I pointed out, you know, the three elements of a magic trick and how he completely missed the magic trick. And
what do you mean?
Well, I mean, it's from The Prestige, great movie if you haven't seen it.
I haven't.
You got to see it. It's great. Anthony Hopkins and David Bowie plays Nikolai Tesla in it. It's awesome.
That's Christian Bale and...
Yeah, Christian Bale.
You have Wolverine and Batman in that.
Yeah.
Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so he says the three elements of the trick. One is the pledge, that you hold it out and you say, this is what you're seeing. Here's a bird. Here's a hat. Here's a rabbit. It's touch it. It's perfectly normal. And because he was talking about, well, when the church lobbies me, there's nothing different. And so I said, well, that's the pledge. That's what they're giving to you. But the turn is when things, they're not, you don't expect it. Something unexpected happens. And so I pointed out, I said, by the time they're talking to you, the decision's already been made. I mean, it's just a formality that they would bother to talk with you. You have no sway in this body. You have no sway over this issue. You're irrelevant to what already has been decided. Then the third part of the trick is you bring it back. And, you know, making someone disappear, that's not the magic. Making the person come back, that's where the magic happens. And so there, what Anthony Hopkins says in the movie, he says...
It's Michael Caine, actually.
That's Michael Caine. Oh, yeah. Jeez, I blew that. Michael Caine. Okay.
Michael Caine.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. So he...
He's also in Batman.
Yeah, he says, you know, you don't, you're looking to see what happened, but you're not really looking because you don't want to know. You want to be fooled. And so that's what I pointed out to this representative is, you know, you're posting on Facebook, there's nothing unusual about this because you don't want to see how unusual this is. Yeah, they brought it back. You had a liquor reform because I did this all in the context of liquor reform. I said, you know, I pointed out, you know, because he said my first 3 years up there, I told the church that, you know, I was against them on the Zion Curtain being this foolishness where we hide drink mixing from people. And I even voted against how they wanted me. And so I pointed out, I said, you didn't cast any votes. Those first 2 years, there was a bill that never got out of rules because church whispered in people's ears and I mean, you're fooled by the magic here. You had a conversation that you thought had meaning. You're sitting next to them in the car. You tell the church, buckle up. You might not like this. I'm against you. And you're hearing the car sounds. You're turning the wheel. The whole time the car's up on blocks. There is no bill. There are no votes. They made it disappear. But then they brought it back in this year, 2017. But it was preordained. I mean, you, none of the other representatives or senators had a chance to amend anything. I mean, an amendment on the floor, unheard of. You're not going to do that because all of this is being controlled by the church in the back rooms. They whisper to members of leadership. They don't even bother to talk to rank and file members, at least real conversations that have effect. And, you know, no other entity can do that.
So they have this guy who they say is their lobbyist, but he's just there. That's just for show.
Well, no, they have they have lobbyists, they have lawyers, and they go talk to members of leadership. Mm-hmm. And they have select members of leadership, and they whisper in their ear, this is what we need to happen, and magically it happens. And you don't have amendments on the floor to those bills. You don't really have discussion.
You were in position of leadership in the House. Were you also? Did you get any in the Senate?
No, I was chair of Higher Education Appropriations.
So, but I mean, did they ever do that to you?
They did it to me. Mm-hmm. So you take the non-discrimination bill that we've been talking about. So I told you, 2013, we passed out of committee. 2014. We couldn't even debate it, and I was really, that's the maddest I've been up there. I mean, the genius of Madison and the founders is we take our toughest issues and push them to our legislative bodies. That's where the things that divide us, that threaten to tear us apart, that's where we air those things out and come up with solutions. And to say, okay, we have this Supreme Court case, this issue is white hot, we're not going to talk about it in 2014. I'm like, that's not how we operate. We're so much better than this.
But I mean, that's how the church wanted it to happen.
Yeah, well, exactly.
We're not going to talk about it.
That's what I'm saying. And so you might remember I had a press conference, and right outside the closed Senate doors, the center doors, and the way that you communicate with senators, you send in blue notes. And so on a blue note, I wrote, here, SB 100. And I taped it to the door, and I encouraged people to do the same. And it was awesome. That was a Friday. Came back on Monday, and, I mean, that door and the walls around it were just covered with blue notes. Here, SB 100 messages. It was super cool. Mm-hmm.
But they didn't.
Didn't, and that's when the Capital 13 went up. And
Troy Williams and all of those other folks.
Those hooligans and outlaws.
Got arrested.
They got arrested for blocking committee doors. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was cool, a little civil insurrection. And so that really ramped up things and heightened the controversy. So going into the 2015 session, media was calling saying, are you going to pass the bill this year? I said, I have no idea. I'm really pretty irrelevant to the process. All 104 legislators were really pretty irrelevant to this. You need to ask the church. If the Mormon church wants this bill to pass, it will pass. They'll say something about it. If they don't want it to pass, they'll be silent and let decades of prior teachings carry the day. And so... Media, you sure you want to say that? I'm like, yeah, that's the truth. And so that kind of ramped things up, and all of a sudden the New York Times, Washington Post, they were calling. They're saying, wait, go over this bit about the church. They said, yeah, this is their issue. We won't decide this. The church will decide. And so they were calling the church, and I don't know if that factored in, but the church, I'm sure, was feeling pressure from various fronts. And so it... the second day of the session held a press conference and said, we want this to pass. Bam, it passed. I mean, it was, you know, we had to really struggle on language, and they wanted a bill outside of our existing statute that covers race, age, gender.
Religion.
And so, religion. So Senator DeBacchus and I on that were like, yeah, bullshit, no way. We're not having a separate but equal provision. What we do to sexual orientation, gender identity, we're doing to the NAACP, to Anti-Defamation League, to, you know, it's going to be in this statute or we're not going to do it. And by that point, they had said, we need something to pass. And so we're like, well, we're not going to pass a piece of shit.
That kind of put you back in a position of some power,
right?
Didn't it? That's interesting.
Right. And so, you know, that is strength in the legislative process. At times, you need to walk away from your own bill if things are really going bad. So we passed it, and that was the strength of the church, is legislators who the year before, I'm sure they were, you know, I would die before I voted for this because I'm defending my God. Well, they're elbowing each other out of the, elbowing each other to mug for the camera at the signing ceremony, which was an amazing thing in the rotunda. So that was great. It was fun working with the church. And then the next year, I was running hate crime legislation because... you know, we don't have anything in there about sexual orientation, gender identity.
Right?
Still don't. Yep. Because, so I think they thought that one wasn't going to go anywhere. But, you know, this is my 16th year up there. I was pretty good at it. And we blew it out of committee. I think it was 5-2, 6-1. I mean, we blew it out with strength and had the votes to pass it out of the Senate. And then they killed it by press release. I mean, someone in the church's media department said, we struck a delicate balance in 2015. It shouldn't be upset, blah, blah, blah.
Let's go slow.
And boom, it was dead at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, people who had committed to vote for it, they're like, yeah, I'm no longer with you. I'm like, oh, geez, I wonder what changed. So, yeah, I mean, I
don't know. What do they think's going to happen to them?
Well, that's my point is you know.
They're going to go to hell.
I mean, I don't know if you saw this thing. Something came out on Mormon, what is it called? Mormon Leaks or something?
WikiLeaks, whatever. Yeah.
Whatever it is. This past weekend. And so, you know, I don't know if it's right or not, but you have Elder L. Tom Perry, who he was a point person in 2015 on this, where around the same time he's with the stake up in Layton saying that we need to make sure our legislature protects the church. And, you know, to me, that's just kind of weird that, you know, Jesus needs the protection of LeVar Christensen and the Utah legislature. I mean, I think, you know, I think he's a little more powerful than that. But it's interesting that this worldwide church, it just needs to be so active in the legislature in a little state of 3 million people to the extent that it's going to get down into the weeds of the criminal law. I mean, to me, it's just, it's bizarre. And part of the reason, a big part of the reason why I am speaking out about it is it needs to stop. And I've had a lot of members of the legislature since I've done this, and I mean a lot, send me texts and Facebook messages saying, good job. You know, we need to be better. We shouldn't do this. But also, I think for the health of the state, this is creating divisions that don't need to be here. I mean, the church, again, I could spend hours talking about how awesome it is. You look at the homelessness issue. Not only does it help out with that, the bigger story is it keeps the problem from being much worse by keeping people from falling into homelessness. You know, you look at the investments it makes in the state. I mean, it does so many good things. Why? I mean, as you know, it's loathed in Salt Lake City in a lot of circles. Why would that be? I think it's because people, well, they believe correctly that it is controlling the political fate of the state. It's
in
not,
secret.
In secret. It's an, yeah, I mean, that's fine. That's, walk through the front door.
That's what I like what you said. They could lobby for the same things, just do it openly.
Yeah, lobby. You have a lot of power. You're going to win, but let's have these conversations out in the open because you have non-Mormons or lapsed Mormons who they're just frustrated, think their vote doesn't matter, their representation doesn't matter because the church is going to whisper in someone's ear and it's just going to magically happen. And that is entirely how it happens. It needs to stop, and I think that that will make for a healthier state.
Is there anything you can do other than what you have done now that you're out of the legislature to work on that kind of an issue? Is there any other than just voice your opinion?
Well, I think we all need to talk about it. I appreciate you giving time here on this show to talk about it. I think people just shouldn't tolerate it. You know, that's how things work in a representative democracy. Things go along until we decide we're not going to tolerate this anymore. These conversations help. I think anytime someone asks for your vote, you need to ask that person, look, are you going to force the Mormon church to walk through the front door? Are you going to, you know, require them if they have a position and you know that's guiding legislation, are you going to force them to sit down at a committee table and say it out in the open? Are you going to feel free to amend their bills, the bills they draft, just like any other bill that's out there? And again, I'm wowed. I'm stunned by the reactions I've had from very prominent legislators saying, yeah, you know, I'd love to be pissed at you on this, but you're right. And you know you're right, and we need to do better on this.
So now you're in private sector. You're doing work with the University of Utah, and you've moved to, at least you and your wife have moved up to Salt Lake. How old are your kids?
So they're 18 to 22. We have four of them, a tight pattern.
Tight pattern.
I'm a Republican. That's how we talk. The youngest is still at home. She'll be a senior at East High.
So you moved everybody up here. How did they feel, particularly the young one, about leaving school in St. George?
Well, she loves St. George and Dixie High, and so she misses it. The others, they were out. You know, one goes to school in Boston. My daughter, who goes to the U, she's starting a master's in public health. We get to spend a lot of time with her, which in part she loves, but I think in part we've invaded her space.
Why did you come up here?
Yeah, she left us, and then we followed her up here. So sorry, Ruth.
It's terrific to talk to you and get to know you a little better through that, talking about the legislature. You oversaw a lot of, you were a part of a pretty big cultural shift. In the United States, and it was particularly a big cultural shift for the state of Utah. I remember when I interviewed Gary Herbert at the governor's mansion, and it was just a very friendly. It was wonderful. He took me throughout the mansion, you know, and showed me. He knows everything about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he knows all of that stuff that's hanging on the walls.
Very, very personable.
Yeah, and he at one point, you know, we've got a photo of it. He's standing there, and he's got his arm around my shoulder, you know, and he's pointing at pictures and stuff on the wall. And but right at the end of it, I said, I promised I wouldn't ask you any political questions, because he was pretty hesitant to do it.
Yeah.
And I said, I wouldn't ask you any political questions. And I'm not sure if we did this on the air or not, or on the podcast or not.
But I don't said, remember.
What are you going to do? How will you feel, Governor, when gay marriage becomes the law of the land, same-sex marriage? And he said, oh, I don't support that, and I don't think that would happen. It's not going to happen. And I said, I think you're on the wrong side of history there.
Yeah.
I think it's going to happen sooner than you think. And it happened faster than I thought it would.
Oh my
goodness. But he said, well, if it's the law of the land, then I'll uphold it. And I will. And he said, it's not, I don't have anything against the people.
Yeah.
You know, he said, if it's the law of the land, I will uphold it, and that's my job as a governor. And I had a great deal of respect for him for that.
Yeah.
You know?
But then didn't he fight it with our tax money to the Supreme Court?
A little, yeah.
I mean,
Herbert versus Kitchen, but that he felt that was his job as the governor of the state of Utah, representing his constituents. He felt that was his job to do it.
Yeah, what extraordinary times. It's most of these societal changes, they take forever. And, you know, being new to the movement, easy for me to say, wow, it was so fast. And, you know, you take, Connell Donovan, you take Jim DeBacchus, folks who've been around a long time, they're like, there wasn't anything fast about
this.
Yeah,
no, there wasn't.
But you know, for those of us who weren't there from the inception, it does just seem whipsaw fast. And, I'm so glad that my daughter in Equality Utah, that folks got me to the side of the angels when they did, so I could be along for the ride and hopefully help out in this state. There's still a lot of work to do. But yeah, it's just been amazing to see. And probably the most amazing thing for me was my relationship with my constituents. As I thought, okay, I know these people very well. Anytime I go to a ball game, grocery store, they're always, hey, just one thing. And so I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to take this step, and I hope they'll be with me. And the people, this issue, it's decided. And I think some Republican politicians and leaders, they miss that because they hear some loud, angry voices and some scared voices. But it's done.
Yeah.
I mean, too many people, they, just like I did with my daughter's friends, they just know too many gay people. They just know, and they're just like, they're just people.
Or they're in your family, or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like where I am now, it's like, oh, you know, I know this person who, really likes great movies. We like to talk about music, all these things. And I think he might be gay. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. And, you know, that's just where we are as a society. And this is, this state, the impulses of this state, these are just good people wanting to do good things, truly do want to love their neighbor. And this issue's over.
Yeah. We need to kind of wrap this up, but it'd be great to talk to you sometime too about, what's happening right now in terms of seeing these racial divides pop up. They've been invited out into the open, I'm afraid. They've been kind of shadowy and kept behind doors for a long while, but someone invited them out and said, come on out, let's show your faces.
Politically, the light of day is a great thing, and invite them out and then step on them like roaches. I mean, that's where I think we are as a society. We tolerate racism less and less and less, and you see this nonsense in Charlotte. You see KKK and all these folks. People, bring it out in the open, and then let's stomp on it and squash it. We're doing better and better as a society.
Yeah. Steve Urquhart, thanks a lot. I hope you enjoyed your croissant sandwich.
Very tasty.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for the conversation. Thanks, Dylan, for producing the show.
You're welcome. Thanks to the people at 50 West Cafe for the breakfast. It was really good.
Yeah. And, that's it for the Let's Go Eat Show this time. I'm Bill Allred. Remember, if you're pouring drinks, always make mine a double.
Broadway Media Podcast Network.